I'm Dave Cawley, investigative journalist and host of the podcast, Cold. In October of 1985, a woman named Cherie Warren left work at a busy Salt Lake City office
to meet her estranged husband at a downtown auto dealership.
She never made it home. Cherie's car surfaced weeks later in Las Vegas.
In the parking lot of a hotel casino.
No one knows how it got there.
Strange. It was strange.
Both Cherie's estranged husband and her boyfriend raised suspicion for investigators.
I kind of thought that he might have done something.
But no arrests were ever made. In Cold Season 3, we dig into double lives, make new connections in the case, and examine the difficulty raised by reasonable doubt.
We want answers just as much as anyone else.
They have creeps like that now too, so nothing's changed.
That's the new Cold Season 3, The Search for Cherie. Now available anywhere you get your podcasts.
Hello and welcome to the Loudmouth Project's Voices of Reason. I'm Jason Lee along with Amy Donaldson. On this episode, we're joined by Kim Bohorquez. She is a Latino community reporter for the Sacramento Bee's Capital Bureau and journalist for Report for America. And today we're going to talk about an article she wrote on the use of certain language in describing people of Latin heritage. And I want to say that, first of all, Kim is a former colleague of ours, so thank you for joining us today.
Thank you for inviting me. I'm so excited to be here.
So let's dive into this. Kim, you wrote recently about the use of a term that has become, you know, relatively popular to describe people of Latin heritage, and that is Latinx. And you kind of broke down how not everyone is on board with this new descriptor. And I was hoping you could explain to us, you know, how you came up with this particular idea to write this story and what you found in your research.
That's a great question. You know, since I've been here at the Sacramento Bee since last year in June, the most common question I've been asked is how to even say the term Latinx. And, you know, I think that really is telling about the curiosity that people have, but also the sensitivity they have to referring to you know, Latinos or Hispanics in the U.S. And, you know, Latinx is a gender-inclusive label that refers to Latinas or Hispanic women and LGBTQ Latinos. And, you know, that can also be very controversial because the Spanish language, inherently, they gender their nouns. You know, there's a masculine or a feminine version of our nouns. And you know, there is controversy that when you see a group of Hispanic people, they are called Latinos, and even if there are women in that group. And that's really where Latinx has grown.
Yeah. I mean, one thing I thought was interesting in your piece, Kim, and we'll share the link in our show notes, but is that it's something I've heard, which is, so I was confused about when to use Latino, Latina versus Latinx. And somebody said, you know, nobody likes Latinx because mostly white people use it. That's okay. I was just gonna say I just wondered if you found that to be true when you talk to people of Latin descent. Were they saying we don't want an umbrella term, or were they saying they felt mislabeled by an umbrella term? I'm not even sure who came up with Latinx.
I would say that is a criticism of that term, because what I've heard is that working class Latinos, you know, haven't heard of that term. You know, I looked up a 2020 Pew Research study, and I found that 3% of Latinos in the U.S. who were surveyed for the study only use it. You know, so that means that, you know, there's 96 to 97% of a population that doesn't use the word. And, you know, here in California, it's something that our governor uses, Governor Gavin Newsom. You know, he uses it during press briefings, during you know, he uses a label in his tweets, and there is that criticism that only white people use it, or more specifically, white progressives. And another criticism is that, you know, it just shows that they're not connected with the Latino community if they're using that term to refer to a group of people. you know, that they don't identify as. One example is during the 2020 presidential election, Elizabeth Warren used that term, and she was criticized for it, you know, for using a term that Hispanic people don't identify as. And you know, President Trump or former President Trump did the opposite, and he really embraced the terms Latino or Hispanic in his communications to that really important electorate.
So it, I mean, do people of Latin heritage, do they, what is the preferred pronoun that they would, or I guess is it a pronoun or an adjective? I guess it could be both. What's the preference among those who actually are from this heritage?
You know, going back to that research study, it said that people would rather be referred to as their country of origin. So that could be Mexican, Cuban, Peruvian, Salvadoran, and it's really difficult, you know, to categorize people or descendants of over 30 Latin American countries into one group. So I think that's where that preference comes from. And at the same time, I also see the term Latinx. I see that, you know, I see the same debate about that over pronouns, you know, using she or he versus they. And, you know, I think it's a matter of personal preference. And I think you should ask, you know, if you use the terms Latino and Hispanic, which is, you know, those are words that are used by the census. They're in our AP style playbook. You know, those are fine terms to use. But if somebody asks you, actually, I don't like that term. You know, will you use Latinx? You know, then it's up to you to decide if you want to call them that. But you know, I just think it's always important to ask first.
Well, one of the things can you give us a little, so Hispanic, in case people don't know, is not a term that people of like Mexican descent decided, you know what we should call ourselves? Let's just have a big giant group, you know, an umbrella term for us. It was actually white people trying to describe people who were not white. And that's the thing that I think is interesting, that it came about with the census when they tried to, I guess, create more categories of race and ethnicity on the census. And I just wonder what are you, when you talk with people about the terms Latin or Latino or Latina or Latinx, do they bring up Hispanic? Because I know a lot of Hispanic people who don't like it. They want to be called Mexican or, you know, Portuguese or where, you know, they don't want a catch-all term for people who speak Spanish, I guess, would be the only other way to say it, who are not white.
Yeah, and you're right to point out that criticism. You know, Hispanic can also be a controversial term, you know, because of its association with Spain. And also, you know, we do have Latin Americans or Latinos who live in Latin America or who are descendants who aren't Hispanic. You know, so Hispanic is a you know, label that really refers to people who come from a place, you know, where Spanish is the predominant language, or, you know, there's traces to Spanish heritage. And one example is that, you know, there are various indigenous dialects spoken in Mexico, but it doesn't necessarily make them, you know, Hispanic just because they live in Mexico.
Interesting. I thought to myself, you know, when you said that, it kind of perked my ears up, only because I figured if it was from, and I'm going to use this term hoping I'm not trying to be offensive, Latinx or Latin American country, that would be okay. But now that you make, you bring up the idea that these are indigenous people, and in some ways they are native of wherever they happen to be from, rather than this catch-all term. And they may or may not even speak Spanish, or it may be some dialect that, you know, is similar but not quite the same. So, you know, this same issue came up with other minority groups, and I guess what I would like to do is talk about that as well, because in America, people of Latin heritage are becoming the largest, if not already, the largest minority group in the United States, and pretty soon they will become the majority group. And it's, to me, it's important to get this right, because it is a matter of A, humanity, and respect for those who would prefer to be called what it is that is comfortable for them, rather than an easy catch-all and comfortable for us. It's not about us making it easy for us. It's about just being respectful to other people. We'll continue our discussion with Sacramento Bee reporter Kim Borrocas. You're listening to Voices of Reason.
2 years ago, Americans watched in horror as a crisis unfolded at the Kabul airport.
There's desperation and anguish.
More than 80,000 Afghans have since arrived in America, but this story is still unfolding. I'm Andrea Martin. In my new podcast, Stranger Becomes Neighbor, we'll find out what happens to these new arrivals in our communities. Who would help our newest neighbors? Follow us at kslpodcast.com, Apple Podcasts, or anywhere else you listen.
Hello, we are back with the Loudmouth Project's Voices of Reason. I'm Jason Lee, along with Amy Donaldson, talking today with Kim Bohorquez. She is a Latin Communities reporter for the Sacramento Bee's Community Capital Bureau, and she's also a journalist for Report for America. And today we're talking about an article that Kim wrote in the Bee, basically kind of giving us a primer on the use of ethnic descriptors. And in this case, it's describing people of Latin descent and of indigenous, descent, depending upon what countries you're talking about. And Amy came up with this idea of talking about just the idea of ethnic labels. Mm-hmm. And I think we all understand kind of why they are used, and that is for convenience sake. However, there's always, particularly if it's the person being described, there may be some point where they're not necessarily comfortable with the labels they've been given. And this is part of that discussion, I would say, especially as the way Kim had described it, because Latinx, which has become a somewhat popular word to describe people of Latin heritage, has become more and more used in the lexicon. But not everybody is good with that.
Well, and I think if we're honest about ethnically and racial labels, they make it easier when you say they make it convenient. They make it convenient for white people to decide who's not white. And when we're looking at how we define race, and people always get upset when you talk about what is a social construct, what is not a social, what is DNA, obviously cultural traditions are passed down and people have a heritage we can see and experience for ourselves. But the idea of dividing people into races and ethnicities is really a white concept, and it's to basically be able to account for, how many and who gets what privileges in a society. And the term Hispanic comes out of the census and being able to count people who are, let's be really blunt about it, not white. And so I've actually talked to professors, and I know I've, on Code Switch, one of our favorite podcasts, they talked about there's a black professor who uses the term non-white, but most normal people out in conversation are super uncomfortable with that. I don't know, Jason, would you like to refer to yourself as non-white in a group setting? Or
I think it's
Kim?
Pretty obvious I'm non-white. And I think Kim and I wouldn't have to make that distinction. But I would say, so Kim, I know, and I might have mentioned this to you a few decades ago, because in America, people of African heritage, myself, African-American, have gone through, generational changes in the words that are used to describe us.
Yes.
And so when I was born in the 60s, Negro is still a thing. And in fact, I remember in the 70s when we pretty much got away from that. I mean, we were just black then, and it just became black and white, despite the fact that nobody's black and nobody's white. I mean, in all honesty, but
yeah,
that again is just a descriptor. And then in the 80s, they came up with African-American, and it's kind of to the point of your article, actually. That is, it's all-encompassing, but it describes people who, generally speaking, are from African heritage. However, I remember I had a friend of mine who was from Haiti, and though there may have been, some decades ago, those were indigenous people in the Caribbean. So they weren't necessarily from Africa. And I always felt as though that was not inclusive by making them be like me, because, my people happen to be from, probably from Africa. So as it relates to people of Latin heritage, this is kind of the same discussion, but not from, it's not being done internally, but being,
the
conversation is being driven from people who are outside the culture.
Yeah. I mean, I guess, Kim, what terms are you comfortable with or uncomfortable with as far as these kind of ethnic and racial labels?
In my last segment, I talked a lot about the criticisms of Latinx, but the truth is that there's a lot of Latino millennials who are increasingly coming out as LGBTQ. And because of that, you know, you're seeing, you know, gay Latinos use the term Latinx even more. Even in Latin America, I'm not sure if Latinx has taken hold, but I know that there's a term in South America called Latin A, and it ends with an E, and that's something that people are embracing in South America. So I think, you know, in the U.S., you know, Latin A might not be as popular, and the term Latinx in the U.S., you know, might be used, you know, among white progressives. But I think that there's also, you know, a case for it, you know, because of its inclusiveness. But you asked personally, you know, what I'm comfortable with. And, you know, I refer to myself as a Latina. And you know, I'm very proud of that. But if I had a friend who identified as Latinx, you know, then I'll call them that, you know what I mean? But, I think if somebody who wasn't in my community, if they just referred to me as Latinx, you know, I might have an issue with that. And, you know, just because, you know, it's not my people calling me that.
I do think it's interesting the way language is evolving right now, because, I mean, I remember when I started at the paper 30-ish years ago, I asked to create a beat called Minority Issues. And that would be, you know, basically a beat that would cover, like you talked about, reporting gaps, and that's what Report for America is looking at. But that's what Minority Issues was for me. But nowadays, you know, fast forward to today, they're not in the minority numbers wise, right? So it's not a correct term anymore. And some people have said, like, you know, marginalized or disadvantaged. All of those things feel insulting. You know, they feel kind of condescending. And I just wonder, like, what do you see, what each of you guys see going forward about our language on this idea of, if people of color is falling out of favor, you know, because I understand why it's falling out of favor. It tries to, you know, give an umbrella to vastly different experiences. You know, I mean, I just wonder what you guys think going forward. Because we can't talk about people who are not white in a society that's basically built for and by white people. Should we stop worrying about it? I don't know.
Kim, what's your thought on people of color?
You know, it's a term that I have used in the past. It's something that I continue to use. But, you know, I think language is always evolving, and I hope that there, you know, is a term in the future that better encompasses, you know, such a large population of people. And I think it's, you know, as a journalist, it's just always really important to be specific about the people that you're talking to. You know, I hear the term Black and Brown a lot. And, you know, while I have like a clear, you know, description of like what Black means, you know, what is brown, you know, like, and, you know, like so many people can fall under that. So that's, I would say like the term brown is something that I do have issue with, just because it's so broad. You know, like who are we really talking about? And, going back to your question about, you know, how language has changed or how labels have changed, you know, more than 50 years ago in California, for example, you know, we saw Latinos really embrace the term Mexican American. And then we, in the 60s, we saw the term Chicano be embraced. Mm-hmm. And Chicano means, you know, that you're Mexican American, or like you were, or more specifically, you know, you have parents who are descendants of Mexico, but you're growing up here in the U.S. And then, you know, that was too restrictive because it left out Central Americans and South Americans. So now you have, you know, Latino, Hispanic, and Latinx, and, you know, I think it's going to evolve because, you know, 1 in 4 children who are born in the U.S. today are Hispanic. And, you know, it's going to get to the point where, you know, maybe those labels are going to be irrelevant because, you know, there's going to be, you know, mixed children.
And there's a whole other thing there. You know, when we come back, I'll jump in and give my little 2 cents on the term people of color, because, I mean, I've I've grown up hearing that, and to some degree I like it, but I do understand where there might be some differences. We will continue our discussion with Sacramento Bee reporter Kim Borges, and this is what I consider one of the more enlightening times that we have in our country, and if we can learn to better see people's humanity and treat them with the kind of respect that they desire, then this is how we move forward. She's Amy, I'm Jason. This is Voices of Reason. We are back with the Loudmouth Project's Voices of Reason. I am Jason Lee, along with Amy Donaldson, speaking today with Kim Borges. She is a Latin Communities reporter for the Sacramento Bee's Capital Bureau and a journalist for Report for America. So earlier this month, Kim wrote an article called "Is Latinx Here to Stay?" and why the term is growing in popularity, but not among Latinos. And throughout this episode, we've been talking about the use of certain labels to describe people of certain ethnic heritage. And most recently, we just talked about people of color and the use of that that term to describe minorities, essentially. I mean, that's in my mind, that's what comes up. And as a person, and I don't mind it, actually. I prefer it because it is inclusive in the sense that we are talking about essentially non-white people. And I don't mind that. However, everybody's not me. And so I don't necessarily believe that just because you can say it to me, you might not make an exception for somebody who wants to be called their preferred adjective or pronoun, just if you were LGBTQ. So for me, it's not a problem. However, as we try to make all of these generalizations, I can see where it would become an issue for somebody of a different, heritage. And so we all should do as Kim was saying early on, speak to people individually, ask them how they prefer to be described. And if you're speaking to a group, again, there has to be some consensus as to how you might use the term that you are going to, you know, speak to people about. And we have to make the effort to find out what that is so that we are giving them their humanity and their self-respect. And then to us, we can be people of, you know, I mean, I don't think it's bad to say a progressive attitude.
But Jason, let me ask you a question. So you're in this car, you meet Kim for the first time. How do you ask her what she prefers to be called without sounding like a dumb white person?
Okay, I don't know that you can do that. I would say, Kim,
Kim, how does this go, Kim? Help us. How are these conversations happening?
How did I ask you, Kim, where you were from?
You know, I don't remember. I feel like, I mean, maybe I just told you because
no, actually, you didn't. I asked you because I didn't know.
Oh, okay.
And so there's nothing wrong with me saying, so Kim,
but what if she
heritage?
Says,
then she explained it to me.
Yeah. But sometimes Kim's going to can back me up on this. Sometimes it is insulting. Am I right, Kim? For somebody to say, what's your heritage?
Yeah.
And describe for us when it is.
It's definitely a balance. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it's definitely a balance, you know, because. You know, that wasn't the first question that Jason asked me, you know. Jason didn't just meet me, hi, I'm Jason, where are you from? You know, that's when it becomes problematic. You know, I think it took a few days or a few weeks. You know, also, Jason is a person of color, you know, he's a black man. And, you know, he's probably heard that, you know, he's probably had that question asked to him. So, you know, even though I don't remember, you know, how I brought it up, you know, I could tell that there was definitely some sensitivity to asking that question, you know, and I think, you know, I think it's natural to be curious about someone's race or ethnicity, but it shouldn't be the first question you ask somebody. You know, you really need to build confidence with people. You really need to build that trust, and then maybe you can ask. But, you know, if that's going to be the first question you ask, you know, I always say, I'm from California, and usually that's not the response that people want. You know, they want to know why I'm brown. And I love to make it hard for them. It's my favorite pastime.
Yeah. I mean, I can understand why, because I have a sister who's native, and there are many times where people will try to ask, you know, in some are much more sensitive than others, but like, I think that's really good advice. Don't let it be the first question you ask. Because it is interesting to talk to Ernie about her native heritage, but it is insulting when people say, what are you? Where are you from? Are you adopted? You know, things that seem overly personal or are just so aimed at what she looks like versus who she is. And
that's a great explanation for that.
Yeah, super good advice, Kim. So, yeah, because I do think, you know, when we're talking about is people of color now outdated, should be, I see everybody. Like, it's like I went to bed and the next day I felt 155 years old because I was like, wait. And it just coincided with Kim's article about is it mostly white people using Latinx, you know, that's how I feel. I feel like we're constantly, especially progressives, are trying to figure out how to be sensitive, how to be considerate, but we're also trying to distinguish what's not white. And I just wonder if we're going to get to a point, do either of you think, where we stop that? Because so many people nowadays are mixed. Even if you look at Barack Obama or Kamala Harris, they're mixed race. And so asking what their heritage is or trying to put them in a box is really, really difficult.
So Kim, when you mentioned something to me about how you describe people, and I've been using people of Latin heritage, and you were correcting me in that isn't necessarily the best way to describe it either.
Yeah, I mean, you're certainly not the only person that uses the term Latin. You know, for example, we do have the Latin Grammys. You know, it's not called the Latino Grammys. It's still called the Latin Grammys. But I think a criticism associated with Latin is that, you know, it refers to the dead language or Latin is very broad. You know, there are many Latin languages, you know, aside from Spanish. You know, even English, you know, has words that derive from that ancient language. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I think it's more accurate to say Latino. But, you know, to this day, you know, we still have institutions like the Grammys that still use that term.
You know, and again, I do try to be sensitive, but as you say that to me, I can just continue doing that. Which, by the way, see, that's another thing, too. People act like if they can't say the one word they like, then there's just no other choices. And it's so difficult for them to use another word that is preferred by the people who they're actually speaking to or describing. And there's this sense of laziness and entitlement people have to want to be able to describe people the way they want to rather than see them and ask them how they want, them being the people that they're speaking to, how that individual wants to be, you know, characterized. And I don't think that's too much to ask. It's sort of like when I speak to a young person, if they call me, I mean, I didn't used to like this, but now I'm an AARP member. I think that, you know, calling me sir is fine. And if you respect people, that's just something you can do. It doesn't hurt to do that. And I wonder sometimes, do we lose our sense of respect for others just, you know, trying to make things more convenient for us?
Well, I mean, I think the short answer to that is yes. And part of that is, as you get older, I remember I was listening to a public hearing and a woman introduced herself and she used a really long, you know, very politically correct term. And my husband said to me, I think my time here is done, because it feels complicated to older people, especially not just older, but I definitely older people. It seems to happen more with, where they have called people a thing. They've always been the brown people in my neighborhood have always been Hispanic. Now you're telling me I have to call them Latino or Latinx. You know, why does the world keep changing on me? And, you know, it's silly. And it is entitled. And I loved what Dolly Parton said, which is just don't be a jerk. If somebody says, right, you know, this is what I prefer to be called, then if I say, if you want to be called sir, and I say, you can call me Amy, don't get mad at one of us or say we're making it complicated. We should all want each other to be more comfortable, right?
Well, that's if you think of somebody outside of yourself. But I love that's going to be my mantra from now on. Just don't be a jerk. It's that simple. We will continue our discussion with Sacramento Bee reporter Kim Bohorquez, talking about language and how it's used to describe people of various ethnicities. But in this case, it started out talking about people of Latino descent. And it's grown into what we now know is just don't be a jerk. I like that. With Amy Donaldson, I'm Jason Lee. This is Voices of Reason. We are back with the Loud Mouth Project's Voices of Reason. I'm Jason Lee, along with Amy Donaldson, speaking today with Kim Bohorquez, Latino Communities reporter for the Sacramento Bee's Capital Bureau and journalist for Report for America. And we've been talking about how language is used to describe people, in this case, of Latino descent, and just in general, we got around to just minorities and how we can converse and respect each other by giving them, the due that they ask for when you describe somebody, and rather than the convenience for ourselves of just making a blanket characterization about people when it may not actually fit the circumstance. So, Amy, you wanted to ask Kim something?
Yeah. Well, so Kim has a unique background. I believe she was born in California, but she moved to a small-ish, rural-ish town in Utah County, where she was definitely a minority in numbers, a mostly white community. And I just wondered, and now you live back in California, you know, how did your experiences throughout your, childhood and young adulthood, has it impacted and changed what you want to call yourself or how you see labels when you look at other people?
Yeah, I definitely think that it really helped form my identity. And I would even say that it made me feel closer to my Hispanic heritage. So when I was 12, I was originally born in Los Angeles, California, and I grew up there. And in the sixth grade, when I was around 12, I moved to Payson, Utah. And, it's like black and white, like it's so different. To go from LA to Payson, a town of 10 million to a town of under 30,000. And, it's really interesting, that I didn't know I was brown until I moved to Payson. That concept of like being different or being non-white hadn't been explained to me, or I hadn't experienced it, because the neighborhood I grew up in was very Latino. There were so many, I had so many Asian, Black, and Armenian classmates, and it was actually very rare to see a white classmate. So when I moved to this new town, I got my first reality check of what it means to be a Latina in the United States. When I was walking home from school, and a kid that I'd never met before told me to go back to Mexico. And I wasn't even offended, because I just thought that was such an odd thing to say to someone. I had been to Mexico plenty of times, because that's where my mom is from. And, I didn't even realize that was an insult. So that day I went to my mom and I was like, hey, why did this kid say this to me? And, she explained to me what he really meant, and that, it wasn't nice to say to me.
He was being a jerk, which is what you're not supposed to do.
Yeah. He's being a racist, yeah, and it was definitely a cold splash of reality.
And so how did that, going forward though, you move back to California, like what kind of perspective do you have that you think people who grew up in LA and never left have? What advantages or disadvantages does that give you?
Yeah, because I left Los Angeles, I feel like I kind of see how other people who are not Latino view Latinos, and I'm very aware of that. And, moving to a place where, there aren't a lot of people that look like me, it kind of made me want to discover my roots more. In LA, I feel like, your roots are everywhere, that's what the normative is over there. But in Utah, I really had to become intentional about finding out, traditions, or, what makes me Latina, or, what is Hispanic culture. And, I would say that it's just made me more informed about, where I come from.
What I wanted to ask you, obviously, so Sacramento is considered Northern California, right?
Yeah.
So it's different than SoCal, which LA is from. So can you kind of describe the differences of, kind of growing up in the LA area and then now living in a different region of the state?
Yeah, it's still very diverse up here. Maybe not as much as Los Angeles, just because Los Angeles is so huge. But, you definitely have a lot of immigrant communities here. It's really a cultural city. And I think what was the most striking to me, from being a reporter in Utah to being here in Sacramento, is that I talk to lawmakers who look like me. I talk to policy analysts and decision makers who have a similar experience as me or a similar experience to my family. And that's really weird, you know, because usually, you know, I'm used to talking to people who don't look like me or people who don't, you know, identify or like know my story. So, you know, it's just very interesting. And I think that I'm a better reporter because I understand where they're coming from and I understand their culture.
I wanted to get to one other thing. You know, you've kind of enlightened me today just because, again, just understanding how people see themselves and you're asking us, the general public, to be more aware of that. And to be willing to accept people for who they want to be considered and viewed as, rather than making it, you know, our business to describe them for ourselves. And I'm, do you feel like as you've grown up, and again, just kind of in your early stages of your career as a reporter, that have you watched some change occur, or do you feel like you're seeing some differences in the way it was, you know, when you first started, or when you thought about this as a career, to now being right in it?
You know, I haven't been in this career very long, so, you know, I'm not sure that I can answer that too well. But, you know, I didn't meet my first Latina journalist until I was, you know, 22. And that was a reporter at KSL who was just hired from previously working at Telemundo. And, you know, something that I have seen, though, is the importance of having journalists of color be in those newsrooms. You know, we saw that emphasized, you know, after the George Floyd protests. And, you know, I think it has momentum right now. And I think it's something that news organizations are going to have to take really seriously about hiring diverse and you know, journalists and some that come from underrepresented communities.
That seems to be very difficult because you and I sat in the same newsroom, and we were among the very few people of color. As I went around, I've done various different beats in my job, and so very frequently, even in sports, as far as reporters go, there's very few that are minorities, despite the fact that so many of the people that we cover in these sports are minorities. And it's one of those things where there has to be intentionality from the people who are doing the hiring to want diversity to be part of their staff, especially as they cover things on a variety of topics across this country. But it has to come from a place where they want to, you know, cover this these communities in a representative form, in a way that is fair to them, in a way that is understood by the people who are actually covering them. And we have to make a bigger push, but there also has to be kind of from the leadership of these news organizations a willingness and a desire to see a better sense of coverage for the people that they actually serve.
I would just ask along those lines, Kim, what advantages do you see to having a more diverse newsroom as far as coverage and story ideas, that kind of stuff? What benefit is it?
I think the most obvious one is that you get to talk to people who are normally not included in the newspaper. You know, when I came to the Sacramento Bee, for example, you know, I had the intention of going away from the usual coverage that you know, legacy media has had on Latinos, you know, which mainly focused on immigration or crime, you know. Or, you know, or seeing their mugshots in a newspaper. You know, that was representation, I feel, in a lot of newspapers. And, you know, coming into the Bee, you know, with this mission, you know, I want to represent how healthcare impacts Latino communities, how air quality, which is an issue that is really important to the Latino community here in California, has expressed. And, you know, it's, you know, because I'm from that community, you know, I see, you know, I get to see the different aspects of it and what that community really cares about. And I think it's important to have, you know, diverse people in the newsroom because, you know, they add to the coverage or they see things that normally, you know, a reporter who isn't from a diverse community wouldn't see.
Listen, I appreciate having Kim Bohorquez, Latino Communities reporter for the Sacramento Bee's Capital Bureau and journalist for Report for America, and our former colleague and a friend, I would think.
I know. We miss you.
Thank you very much for having us, for joining us today. And we'll hope to have you write something great again. And you can read her stuff at on the Sacramento Bee's website, which is sacbee.com. Join us again for the next episode of the Loudmouth Project's Voices of Reason. If you have any comments about our show, please contact us via email at vormed@gmail.com or at vorjasonl@gmail.com. Or you can find us on Twitter at @AdOnSports and at @JasonLee1. Our show's Twitter handle is @VORPodcast. Check out our Facebook page, and you can also find and subscribe to free episodes of our podcast on Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, and all the other places where you might find interesting content. Be sure to review our show as well. We love to get your feedback, and it helps us grow our audience. Until next time, I'm Jason Lee, along with Amy Donaldson. When you engage in passionate debate, do your best to keep your dialogue civil. Try to be the voice of reason.
Voices of Reason is a production of the Loudmouth Project.
Thank you.
A gun in the face.
Then all of a sudden they all kind of lined up. They pointed their guns at me. And this is the point where I thought, I'm going to die today.
Started 2 years of horror for an American in Venezuela.
They said, you need to give us your phone and get ready because you're coming with us.
I'm Becky Bruce, and I spent a year researching and piecing together Josh and Tammy Holt's story about their ordeal in a notorious prison.
That's when everything started to turn bad. We had another pound on the door. Boom, boom, boom. And there was the police once again.
You can binge all of the episodes of Hope in Darkness on kslpodcasts.com or wherever you get your podcasts.